Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with the Anderson Business Advisors podcast, and we're here joined today with Tyler. And Tyler, I'm going to butcher your last name. How do you say your last name?
Surratt.
See, all right. I should know that. Anyway, Tyler Surratt is a really great guy that's worked with a bunch of my clients, and that's how I met him. And he works in the field of alternative energy sources, and specifically we've worked with him on conservation easements. So I asked him to join me today so that we could go over the ins and outs of conservation easements. And also you can learn about him and what he does and then where he's headed on the alternative energy area. And from a tax planner, I like these things because there are tax credits and there's tax benefits for engaging in these transactions. And then that's literally how I met Tyler, but you can learn all the gamut. Some people are just very interested in protecting the environment. Some people are interested in protecting their lands and making sure that if they sell it or give it in to future generations, that those generations don't alter it or change its true nature. And there are restrictions you can put onto it. So I'm joined today with Tyler. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you, Toby. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's just kind of jump into a little bit of background on you so they understand who they're listening to and who I'm talking to. How did you get into the world of solar conservation easements, restricting rights, and things like that?
Well, firsthand conservation easement, I used to work for a small regional CPA firm when I was a child, growing up in the tax industry and stuff like that. One of our main partners was into conservation. We had a large farming base and they had a lot of land, and you know anything about conservation and you know anything about farmers, they're poor in, or I wouldn't say poor in money, but you know, their inheritance really is in their land. And and really it's how do they get money out of their land ultimately. So we spend a lot of time in conservation of their land and creating easements and donating of those lands to certain organizations that could benefit from their lands, but also making sure that their lands didn't change, that they were preserved, you know, like you said, for the future generation.
Can you jump in? Because you just mentioned putting easement on your land that restricts it. The topic today really is conservation easements, and you just hit it on the nail on the head. A lot of people have no idea what they are. So at its base, what is a conservation easement?
So I think it was right around the 70s is historically where, you know, the U.S. government kind of quit purchasing land and they decided to trade their greatest asset, which is tax, for land, or to incentivize people for the conservation. And so what they offered was a dollar for dollar deduction, not a credit, deduction on their land for the donation of that asset value, of the market value or appraised value at the time. So what that offered is if that land was worth something, if it could be developed or it could be mined or there was some sort of value to that land, and they wanted green space, that's what they offered to the donor.
So basically, I have a big stretch of land. I could develop it. And if I developed it, it would be worth a lot more than it is right now. But instead, you give, for example, the open air rights to this property to a conservation group or to a hunting group or to some 501c3 or something along those lines. Is that fair? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's where we started. A lot of what we were doing was to preserve habitat.
And, I know Ducks Unlimited and some of those groups are big on habitat preservation.
I was even going to mention Ducks Unlimited. That was one of the main ones we worked with. Okay. This was in Southern Colorado is where we were doing most of our work. So, and that's what they're doing. Typically you can give it to the 501c3 or to a land trust for that conservation of that land. It doesn't have to be some big organization where you're donating it to Ducks Unlimited, or, you know, pretty much you're just guaranteeing that that land is going to be conserved, basically, and nothing is going to be put on it.
What do you get for doing that? So let's say I'm a big landowner. I got a whole bunch of land and I'm worried that as soon as I die, someone's going to take my land and stick, you know, 50 houses on it and develop a bunch of communities. And that's not why I got the land. I don't want the land to have that happen. I want it to be open and usable by people. It should be a natural habitat for, you know, wildlife, et cetera. What am I getting if I put a restriction on that property so it can never be developed?
You're getting, at the time, the appraised value as a tax deduction from the IRS.
So
would be a Schedule A charitable deduction.
Perfect. Yeah. So it's just like giving money to charity, except I'm giving the value of that easement and you have somebody value it. So did you guys do all that? Did you have valuations and things like that? And
We did it first. Yep. So historically, that's what supports your easement, is how the entity set up, what the structure is, basically the legalities inside of that entity. And the biggest part of making sure that this is a bona fide deduction is the value, or the placement of that value, and that has to come from a qualified appraiser.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Do you have any stories or anybody that, like, anything you could relate to folks so they can get an idea of how this stuff looks?
In short, really, like, you know, it really does stem from people that own land that really do want to conserve their, I mean, we have plenty of stories of that way. We do have just an initial landowner. They're looking to keep their land in the long term. One of our clients had a granite rich land. He knew that it was granite rich, and basically that's the value. It is in the granite, not in development or real estate or anything like that. But, you know, he could sell it to a mining company and they could come in and they could get the granite out of it. But that's really not what he wanted to do with the land. Mainly what he wanted to do is keep it in the family, basically hunt, fish, camp, you know, it was quite a bit. And so he decided to donate or conserve that land through conservation easement. And keep in mind, like, why you and I are talking and why some of your clients are listening is the fact that, like, they can be a part of this conservation easement without owning the land. And that's why we're here, is so that, you know, most of your clients are probably thinking, well, I don't have any land to donate and none of my land's worth anything. Well, you know, you find people, because that land to that farmer, or, you know, the landowner, was worth a $4 million deduction. And basically what he wants is a portion of that. He can't use it because he doesn't have the income to be able to offset that. But what he ends up doing is selling that on the secondary market.
You just hit the nail on the head. He can't use all that deduction. And, like, in the case you just presented, it may be somebody that owns a large tract of land. They're not cash rich. They're not making a ton of money, but they're land rich, and they're entitled to a huge tax deduction if they say, for example, no mining on my land ever. I give the easement to the mineral rights to a qualified 501c3 or conservation company, land trust. And that's different than the land trust that my clients are used to dealing with on single families and things like that. This is a land trust where they're holding the land in trust for the benefit of society type thing. It's more of a charity.
Right.
So you're giving that mineral restriction, the easement to that mineral rights to that charity, for example, and that's going to devalue the land. They get a deduction for that. Now, if the farmer can't use it all, then they go out and they raise money and have other people buy in who can use it, and then they're going to put the conservation easement on the property. Is that an accurate way to explain it?
It's pretty accurate. You know, like, typically the legalities of it is, farmer's going to offer up his land, they're going to create some form of partnership, or, you know, land partnership inside of this land. Everybody that is wanting to be part of this land is going to be invested in that land. What you don't want to do is present it as, you know, like, this is a conservation or tax avoidance technique. You know, obviously that's what it is, but, you know, there is a vote that needs to take place within the partnership once the partnership is established as to the route they want to go with the land. You know, the three options are: do nothing, of course, let's do nothing with this land. let's develop this land in some form. What's the land worth? And the third option would be, let's conserve it. Let's donate it to, you know, the government for easement. And that's typically that last one is why people are involved in the partnership is that strategy. But, you know, keep in mind, there's always the other two options to be able to take place when joining, you know, the conservation.
So run me through a typical situation. Somebody, let's say I'm Joe Investor. I'm in a really high tax bracket and I have a lot of income coming in, or I'm in a moderate tax bracket and I just don't like paying all my taxes. And I also believe in conservation. So I'm one of those guys that says, hey, you know what? I'd rather put my money into something that I know is going to benefit society rather than give it to the government where I don't know what they're doing with it. So let's say that I have $100,000, $10,000, $100,000. We'll use $100,000. So how would that work? Would I invest it in a fund or of some sort, or what would I be doing?
All right. Well, let's just take your scenario, for example. Let's say you're my client. Typically, some people that I deal with or advise, like just like you say, they're in a tax bracket that they don't want to be in. They basically have no other means for deduction. Like they're not. Let's take one of mine, for example. He's a high income earner. He's, you know, 500, 750 plus in a W-2H. Like there's not a whole lot of freedom deduction wise, you know, for him to take advantage of anything to bring his income to a level or reduce his overall tax liability. So this strategy would play out for him. What you want to do is you want to take that $100,000 that he wants to invest or do something with, and you join the partnership with that $100,000. In exchange for that $100,000, if the land is selected for conservation, then the owner of that land, or, you know, in order to pass down that the value that was given as a deduction, let's say it's $4 million or whatever, and the landowner is looking to raise $1 million, that's what he's going to take from the land. That's how he gets his money from the land. He's going to take that, and in exchange, he's going to pass down a deduction, a $4 million deduction, to whoever donated inside of that $1 million. Like that's his incentive. Like he has no other incentives for anybody to invest but that deduction, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to pass that down at a 4-to-1 ratio. So me, if they were going to pay that tax, they're now going to get a $400,000 deduction to be able to take as a charitable contribution for the $100,000 investment.
Using your example, 750, you're in the top bracket. So you're taking $100,000 that would have been taxed federally at 37%. You can't do much about the Social Security tax on that, but we can offset state income taxes. Let's say you're in California. You have 37% plus you have 13% and some change. So you're really at a 50% tax bracket. So you give $100, you're going to get a $400,000 tax deduction.
Right.
All right. So then you take that $400,000 and you have to figure out what it's worth to you. Now you do have limitations. You have a 60% of your adjusted gross income whenever you're doing charitable donations. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some restriction there, but you're going to carry forward the unused portion. But in essence, you're getting about a $200,000 benefit for a $100,000 investment. Is that a fair way to look at it?
That's a fair look. Yep.
And there's some pretty bad actors out there in this space who'd use that and they try to abuse it. Are you aware of any of those guys?
I would say, you know, if you're looking into this type of strategy, what you want to make sure of, like I mentioned before, is definitely reputation. Like if this is something that's just been created by two individuals looking to get money for some land, they're pulling a Zillow estimate for the land of what the developmental value is. Obviously, that's a stretch in it. But, you know, like that's what I'm saying. You really want to make sure of who you're dealing with and how they create those things. These things take time. It's not something that, you know, you just pull up January 1st or, you know, of the tax year or even later on in the quarters and be like, you know what, I need to donate my land. Like, it can be done. Don't get me wrong. It can be done and has been done that way. But, you know, really reputation is what precedes it. You want to make sure the law firm that's used to set up the entities, like, who are they? You know, is it the landowner's cousin? You know, who knows what law school he went to? Obviously, the appraiser, like I said, like, you know,
it's going to be all of these, because they're so big. My rule of thumb is it's probably going to get audited just to check to make sure that they actually have a valid appraisal. But I think it really comes down to the appraisal. What's the value? So,
right.
Are you familiar with Donald Trump's conservation easements on like Mar-a-Lago and some of his golf courses?
Yeah, I am.
do you remember the situation? Hey, Mar-a-Lago, do you remember the facts on that one?
I only really know the summary on that, but you know, it's used as a case of really was that conservation, you know, like, that's
open air easement. It's like, hey, I'm never going to develop this thing, right?
Right. I think you can read about it in a Forbes article, you know, like really there's no developmental value inside of there. Obviously it has a golf course and stuff like that, but you know, that's not the type of stuff you want to deal with. Like mostly what we deal in, or, you know, what I advise my clients to invest in are aggregate type conservation, because what holds their value? You can obviously value granite, you can value whatever can be mined, like at the time that it was donated. Like you can probably Google the value of granite right now and realize that it's worth, you know, $225 a ton. And if they determine like so much is, you know, so many tons are on that land, then you obviously have a verifiable value.
Do you do core samples and all that, where you're going in, you're getting that how many ton are in there, and then you just say multiply that by the fair market value of the granite and.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's all part of the appraisals. And that's why I say, like, you really do want to make sure, like, you know, we used to do aerial overviews of the land for investors with the drones. That's becoming pretty popular right now. What does this land look like? Because for a certain period of time, as an investor in that land and as an investor in the conservation, you have rights to that land. You want to know what it looks like, you know, like whether you're a $50,000 investor or a $2 million investor, you have some rights to that land. And that's what's given to you for the donation of that. So it would be nice to have rights to the Mar-a-Lago resort, right?
I think he put the open air rights, and he said, hey, I'll never take all the antiques out of the clubhouse. And I think it was a $1 million deduction he got for doing pretty much nothing.
Yeah, I think in that year he had 60 LCE investments. It really is a strategy, but you know.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
In all seriousness, this is a guy who's worth billions who goes out and manages to not pay much in tax, which is probably why he doesn't want to release his tax returns as we're talking today. At least we haven't seen him. But he's probably saying, hey, I can pretty much not pay tax because I have all this property. I can just put conservation easements and give away a lot of these things to keep my lands that I own used the way that I want them to be used. In other words, maybe he doesn't want them to be dug up or mined or developed and things like that, and he gets a benefit today for that. In a true conservation mindset, this is a really good thing. You're taking your land and you're actually putting restrictions on it, so it's not going to be used for those purposes. Maybe you don't want it to be used for those purposes and it's better for society, so you're just getting a tax benefit. For an investor, they're just getting the tax benefit because they're participating, right? So they're giving, they're going to the farmer, they're going to the landowner, and they're saying, hey, I'll help you out with this. I just want the tax benefits, but I'll give you my money so that it's not for nothing for you too.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assumption. Like, I mean, a typical investor probably never sees the land that they're invested in, you know, but it is, you know, when we talk like 1% of the United States who has a good bulk of the tax liability, you know, they have a good portion of income, they have a good portion of, you know, the 1%ers that pay the tax. This is how they mitigate their tax, and it's how, you know,
it benefits society too. Like
every day, like this is how it is. Like, you know, they're going to purchase it. They may raise some cattle on it or anything like that. But as far as, you know, some elaborate scheme, like, you know, those are the kinds of things you want to be aware of. That's why the IRS is aware of these. You know, there is abuse. Another thing you probably want to be aware of is what's the multiplier if you're an investor. Like, you know, you get above 4.5, maybe 5, like multiplier to where you're getting, you know, $5 of a deduction for every dollar you donate. Like, you know, it's pretty risque. So, you know, another thing to be aware of is
the average last year was 9-1. And that's why the IRS is looking at them. Because there was people, you gave $10,000, you got a $200,000 deduction. That's probably not going to fly.
No. And I think that's why they came out and said that they were, you know, they were going to start to look at these a little bit more carefully. You know, keep in mind, like, let's bring up that topic really quick, the audit topic. You know, people tend to not think that these deductions are real. They're scared that they may be audited because they claim those types of deductions. We can put that fear to rest in surety that if you take that deduction and you're invested in that deduction, you're invested in that partnership. In order for the IRS to question that deduction on your personal tax return, they obviously have to question the entity of itself. The entity is bigger than you. And that's why I say, like, part of who you invest with, like, lawyer wise and land management wise and appraiser wise, those certain values, like, are gonna hold true later on in defense of that easement. And they're prepared for these types of defenses. That's why you want to be made sure that, you know, their team is a reputable team, because they will be prepared for that defense. Like, it's gonna come, but who's the IRS gonna use as an appraiser? Probably somebody in the industry that's similar to the person that your easement used. You know, that's where you want to be.
Yeah. And if it's valued fairly or it's valued fairly, you again. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they don't worry. Say you didn't take enough. We estimated your conservation easement way more than what you took. It's, yeah, you guys left some money on the table. I wonder if they'd ever do that. Have you ever seen that happen?
Where they leave money on the table?
You were too conservative.
Actually, we had one that was fully funded at one time in a conservative manner, and it did go, like, in the upward, I think it was like 8-1 by the time the real value came across. Like, you know, it was a little late for anybody else to invest to bring down, you know, and so that deduction was passed on to the partners that donated, you know, at the 4 million range, 4-1 range. You know, they get a letter and it's like, hey, good news, here's an 8-1. And that one did go through an audit. And I think the value did hold true there.
Yeah. Yep. Just for ease of mind, it's not the individuals getting audited, it's actually the easement that's getting audited.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I was saying is, like, you know, for you on a personal level, your surety is in that easement, and the easement's going to be in defense of that. Like, let's take my client, for example, that was, you know, he's a W-2 guy. Like, W-2 and the land easement is really all he has on his tax return. So, you know, W-2 obviously is defensible to him in a personal audit. So if they were to question the easement portion, then they have to go a little bit higher than him. So it just is what it is. People are on your side. And like I said, the IRS are going to use reputable people. And if you use the same reputable people, then there's no question.
Now, Tyler, you've worked with a few of my guys, a few of my clients. If somebody was looking for an easement, you're not a, what do they call it? You're not the one who owns the land. You're not trying to raise money for your lands. You just work with people that are raising money for their lands to put conservation on it, correct?
Yeah, I would say they're in my network. Pretty much not ethical for me to be a broker of such. Like, I mean, you know, like, obviously there's a promotion factor.
You're not the guy that's just trying to raise a whole bunch of money for himself.
No.
You're just, this is what you do, and I'll get into some of the other stuff you do here in a second. But if somebody was trying to place some money, you could help point them in the right direction with the right fund that could potentially, and then you work, how many funds were you working with last year, for example?
I worked with right at 3. So, you know,
around out there with everybody and their mother. These are actual projects where you're trying to put, you know, it's exactly what you just stated it was, is you're just looking at a few different projects and you're trying to put the easements on. And if somebody wants to participate, that's great. If they don't, they don't. There's lots out there. How would they, if they want to work with you, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me personally. It won't, like, similar to Toby, just kind of on a smaller scale with advisement to small business clients and individuals. You can reach out to my first name, which is Tyler, T, and my last name, S-U-R-A-T, so tsurat@onetreeadvisors.com.
Okay, so it's One Tree Advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you have a phone number in case they just wanted to pick
up? I do. Yep, it's 719-580-3051.
Okay, we'll probably post your information along with this just in case.
That'll work.
make it easy. Some people listen to these. Some people don't watch them. Some people just listen to them when they're jogging or doing whatever else, so they're not going to have a pen.
Okay. And really, like, that's my involvement. Like I said, I used to work for a CPA firm. I never did really get my CPA license. I left before that because my niche or my passion was in the advisement and everyday advisement with a client. Like, I want to be involved with their business. I want, you know, the strategies that they're going to take. I don't want to know about it third quarter. I want to know about it second quarter, or even at the first of the year. So yeah, that's the approach that I take.
What are you doing now besides the conservation easements? What else do you do for energy conservation? I mean, it sounds like that's your niche. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What else do you do?
So we're involved in some solar projects right now. I do own a portion of a solar installation company in the Colorado area. We sell locally residential solar. We do commercial solar. You know, it's just a business I caught on to from my advisement with the clients.
Why do people do solar besides trying to get themselves off the grid? Why would an investor do solar? Or why would somebody who owns rental properties do solar, things like that?
Well, let's say just like an individual, anybody with a tax appetite, you know, if you're looking to go green, like some people, like you said, like it's kind of similar to conservation. Like, you're either looking to go green or you have a tax appetite, or, you know, you're just looking for some sort of investment strategy or place to put your money, like not to avoid tax, but as a strategy to either delay or, you know, make your money go further than just paying tax. So right now, obviously, on the individual level and also on all other levels, solar and any type of other renewable energy qualifies for the 30% tax credit from the IRS. So any type of investment. Go ahead. So
you get a big tax credit for going green. You get 30% tax credit on the project. What else?
Well, let's just say that's on the individual level. You know, really, that's the furthest you can go on the individual level is put solar on your house. You know, there's 30% right off the top of your investment. Obviously, mm-hmm. you're going to pay off in a certain amount of time if you finance, or you can pay cash up front. But, you know, mm-hmm. instead of paying tax, like, you know, invest in that project. On a small business level, there's so many more possibilities. Obviously, you get the 30% tax credit, but you also get the advantages of depreciation, you know, and that type a write-off, which makes the payback a lot sooner. You also get
double dipping on that one. You could actually get the tax credit, and you get you're depreciating the equipment that you're putting up there as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't have any place to put solar, the next step is to look to lease solar, find a place to put solar. A great place to put solar is on a church. You know, everybody, you know, may or may not have a religion, but there's always a church on every corner, and sometimes they need help in the financing aspect. Lease it to them. Like, purchase it yourself, lease it to them. You obviously get the 30% tax credit. They're going to pay your money back, and you're going to get the depreciation as well inside of that. So,
are you selling the energy then to the church? You're like, hey, I'll put a solar array up on your roof, mm-hmm. and I'm going to give you a great deal on the electricity that it generates. Is that what you're doing?
I mean, typically what they're looking to do is mitigate their costs. What they want is any type of charitable organization wants a straight line budget amount. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a lease payment from them, you know, you would charge them appropriately for whatever the insurance rates are, but they're locked in at that lease payment. You know, the beauty of this is in the next 2 years, power costs are going to rise. On average, mm-hmm. nationally, the power rises about 4%. So you have a 4% increase in power every year. So what you're saving is, you know, the 4% every year, and in a 20-year period or a 12-year period that you're paying back to solar as a 501c3 company, like, you're avoiding that 4% increase over that 12 years because you're locked in with a lease payment with an individual that's invested in solar.
And so you're not even selling the energy. You're just saying, hey, I put this thing up on your roof. It's worth $50,000, and you're mm-hmm. leasing it to them at a dollar amount, to where at the end of the lease term, do they own the equipment, or do you own it? Or
they then own the equipment, right? Yep.
That's interesting.
But over the years, you recoup your cost, mm-hmm. but also you receive the 30% tax credit as an investor in that. This is a small scale. Like, I brought that example up, but, you know, keep in mind, there are, just like there are with conservation easements, there are funds that invest in these types of projects. And then as being a partner inside of these funds, all of that trickles back down to you as an investor, like the 30% tax credit, the, you know, the depreciation amount. like all of that trickles back down to you on a K-1 level.
And we're glossing over that it's a tax credit. It means it's actually like a dollar for dollar offsets your tax. It's not a deduction.
Right.
It's a tax credit. So if you get a $10,000 tax credit and your tax bill's 20 grand, you're only paying 10. Like you're going to get, it's going to be just like somebody just reached in and paid it. Yeah, that's pretty potent. I like the fact that you're doing that. And that seems like it's going to do some help and get us more and more people that aren't reliant on the existing infrastructure for electricity and for energy, et cetera. Living in Las Vegas, we're very conscious of water and energy. We have Hoover Dam right around us, but the water especially and all these things, we're always looking at ways to alternative sources. And then we have all these huge solar plants that they're starting to build just because they have so many issues. We have such a high demand. So
essentially what you're doing is you're not looking to get off the grid because the power is always supplied by the power company. What you're doing is putting a system somewhere that the power company is then offsetting your bill with the energy that they're purchasing from you. So you're providing the power company something. My company, in fact, just put a system on a church. The church took advantage of it themselves, or they paid for it, you know, with their own contribution money and stuff like that. Very sizable system. It was $175,000 system. We just finished it right in the middle of December, and the one person that called them right at the end of December wanting to purchase their system from them, and they wanted to purchase it from them and lease it back to them so that they could take advantage of the 30% tax credit. Do you want to know who that person was?
Who?
The power company.
They don't even care about the tax credit. They just know that the energy is cheap, right?
Well, they get the energy, but they did care about the tax credit. It's a for-profit power company, so they need the deduction. So in that area, you know, they wanted to purchase it back from the
100% bonus depreciation. Yep. So they get a tax credit.
They wanted the depreciation. They wanted the tax credit. They wanted everything about that. And they were looking right at the end of the year. You know, they're a pretty profitable power company, but
did they do it?
They were looking for that. You know, I think they're still negotiating that fact with them. You know, transactionally, I think they probably will end up doing it. It makes sense to the church, but because, you know, 501c3s, they just can't use that tax credit. So, but we do have partners that do this all over. You know, if you're into helping in the environment, you're into helping charitable organizations, you're into those types of things, this is a way to do it. Like, you know, it really is. And there's so many more benefits than a dollar for dollar deduction, you know, in a tithing slip at the end, you know, on the backside of your church. Like, you know, you get the same type of benefits almost.
That's pretty cool. I like what you're doing. So, hey, throw out there again just a phone number for these guys. And if they want to get a hold of Tyler, Tyler seems like a pretty good dude and knows his stuff. So what's the phone number again?
719-580-3051.
All right. Hey, Tyler, thank you very much for joining us. This has been very informative. Yes. You know, I do these things all the time, and it's just really neat to talk to somebody who has a pretty good heart and is pretty ingenious. I love this stuff. I'm a tax guy. Yep. So I just,
well, in 2019, if you wanted to revisit it as well, you know, not to continue your podcast here, but opportunity zones are going to be a place for investments and monies and where solar projects are going to go. So your clients are looking to hide those or delay those capital gains. Like, you know, we are going to have some solar projects that are available in those opportunity zones where they can take those capital gains, roll them over into these projects and take advantage of the same type of scenarios that we've been talking about.
You and I will definitely be talking, because I like opportunity zones, qualified opportunity zones under the 1400Z, the new chapter in the tax code. But there's some really good benefits, and obviously you get some deferral of income, but then you never pay tax on the project itself when it grows. Right. We will definitely talk about that, because that's something that I like. And I hadn't really thought about marrying the solar with that, because that's a double, triple dip. That could be pretty potent from a tax offset standpoint. Society.
Yeah, and it's a business that you really don't have to pay attention to once the solar's in. There's not a whole lot of maintenance that goes into it. So it's not like you're investing in a real estate, you know, and worried about real estate taking a dump. Like, you know, solar is what it is. It's the same thing as aggregate. So
it's weird, not to get off topic and then we'll wrap up, but the solar, the first panels that they made, I think, are still in existence. Like the first panels that got stuff there. That these things don't wear out.
Is that accurate? And right now, most of our panel providers, just to throw a shout out to them, they're offering 25-year manufacturer warranties and 25-year production warranties. They're supposed to produce 90% of their efficiencies for 25 years. Like, you know, so if you get into 30-year period, you know, they could be 80-75%. So, yeah.
I buy real estate.
It's a good deal.
25-year warranty on the house.
Good luck with that, man.
Yeah, can you fix the appliances? It's been 20 years. Yeah, right. I wish. Very cool. Thanks again, Tyler. Right. Really appreciate it.
Yep,
so I'm going to have you back. I'm going to keep your hold you to your word on that one. We'll do qualified opportunity zones married with solar. That'll be very interesting. So again, thanks again, bud.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.